I'm still concerned about energy projects on the west side of Cook Inlet. How those proceed under this designation is still yet to be determined.
Habitat protection designations are released for Cook Inlet belugas. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, April 8th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the federal government moves closer to a shutdown.
I'm looking very critically at what the impact will be if we fail to get our act together.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by the Association of Alaska School Boards. AASB believes in investing in early childhood development. It can produce great dividends for kids and our state. More information at aasb.org.
There's only a few hours left for Congress to settle disagreement over the 2011 budget, or the federal government will shut down at midnight. Earlier today, Senator Mark Begich confirmed that both sides in the budget dispute had agreed on a figure for the cuts.
The parties have agreed on a number. They agreed on a $78 billion number, a mix of discretionary and mandatory and some small amount from defense to close out the 2011 budget. Now, I know today there's kind of a new discussion going on was what was the number, but there's no question that all the parties agreed. So it's not a question of the amount anymore.
But Begich said a small, diehard group of House Republicans is holding up forward progress on the budget bill by attaching riders to the deal. Begich described the amendments as social engineering.
So we're down to the wire, and what we're finding is there's a group of folks over on the House side in the Republican majority, and I don't want to say it's a large group because it isn't. It's a small group that has really made a point that they are going to have multiple, what we call, riders on legislation. And these riders, the largest one, deals with women's health care. And I will tell you that we have asked that all the riders not be part of this legislation.
Senator Lisa Murkowski is also frustrated by the process getting bogged down by hardline issues. She says it's important to remember this is the budget for this fiscal year, and it's already April.
We need to be working on not only the budget proposal for FY12, we're 4 months behind on that already, but keep in mind, we're going to be coming up against the debt limit here in the not-too-distant future. We've got some real budgetary issues that are going to be presenting themselves. So I have drawn no lines in the sand and said, well, if this is in, then I am out.
If the government does shut down, Senator Begich could only surmise what the effects will be for Alaska.
We have over $220 million worth of military construction ready to go out of a $400-plus million budget. Those contracts can't be let until they know they have a budget. It's not about just federal employees. It's about private contractors who are prepared to do, as we all know in Alaska, seasonal work in construction. And so we have private contractors ready to move but cannot because the military cannot execute those contracts.
FHA loans and IRS returns will stop. The state's 17,000 federal employees will be furloughed for the most part, and that in itself will be a blow to the struggling economy. Begich said that the details of military pay are still being worked out.
The military will get paid. The question is when. And what we're trying to work out right now is to ensure that the military personnel, active guard, the folks that are on the ground, make sure they get a paycheck and in a timely manner, because we recognize they will still be working and earning, but we want to make sure that check comes on normal course of business. We hope to have that worked out, but I want to reassure military families that they are going to get paid.
Senator Lisa Murkowski echoed the concern over continuity for military pay. She says the proposal the House has advanced does include the full budget for defense, but she says even if that plan gets held up, Texas Senator Kay Bailey Hutchinson has a freestanding measure to ensure military pay is not halted.
I have joined her on that as a co-sponsor. If we have to pass that late evening tonight, if it doesn't look like we're going to be able to piece this thing together, I think at a minimum we will ensure that our military men and women are paid.
But Murkowski says she's also very worried about the federal employees who live paycheck to paycheck. She says she knows they're stressed about what will happen on Monday, and those folks do not see a shutdown as a holiday.
There are many who would be expected to report to work with no certainty that they will receive compensation for it. We've got an obligation to deal with the budgets, do it responsibly, and not leave people hanging like this. So I'm looking very critically at what the impact will be if we fail to get our act together.
The post office will continue to function as it is paid for through revenue streams. Social Security checks and veterans benefits should continue to flow, as should Medicare, Medicaid, and other assistance programs. It's difficult to know what a shutdown would cost, but OMB estimates from the shutdown in 1995 place the direct cost to government at nearly $1.5 billion, in addition to hundreds of million in lost revenue for national parks and local governments. Individual federal departments will post information about the furloughs online. Governor Parnell says he began in February looking for any potential problems that would come from a shutdown of the federal government. He said the subject first came up during a meeting of the National Governors Association. On returning to Alaska, he asked his cabinet to make sure the state is ready.
I just asked them to identify if there were any financial hurdles that we might encounter and be prepared for them, and to work with Office of Management and Budget on meeting those needs.
Director of Management and Budget Karen Rehfeld says her office does not anticipate any immediate effects of a shutdown. However, she says the administration will monitor the state's needs if the shutdown continues for more than a few days. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration announced today it has designated portions of Cook Inlet as critical habitat for the local beluga whales. KSKA's Len Anderson has more.
The critical habitat designation involves two portions of Cook Inlet. NOAA spokeswoman Julie Spiegler describes the areas.
The upper portion of Cook Inlet, which includes Turnagain Arm and Kinnick Arm, where the belugas concentrate during the summer months. And the other area includes areas where the population congregates in the winter, and it includes the middle of Cook Inlet and foraging areas along the western shore of Lower Cook Inlet, Kachemak Bay, and along the east of Cook Inlet near the town of Homer.
The designation is designed to help the estimated 350 or fewer endangered Cook Inlet beluga whales rebuild their numbers. NOAA's Fisheries Services says it's basing its ruling on 20 years of research as well as an economic impact analysis upon South Central Alaska. There was also an expanded public comment period, during which the Fisheries Service received some 350,000 comments worldwide. Spiegler says because of public comments, NOAA's final ruling contains two exceptions not present in its initial critical habitat proposal.
NOAA Fisheries has excluded the Port of Anchorage from critical habitat designation because of its importance to national security. And then Eagle River Flats Range on Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson was excluded because it is already under an existing Department of Defense Natural Resource Management plan.
Anchorage Mayor Dan Sullivan was a prominent opponent to the Cook Inlet beluga whale critical habitat designation. Sullivan and the mayors of the Kenai Peninsula Borough and the Matanuska Susitna Borough had predicted dire economic consequences from such a critical habitat designation. Of key concern to Anchorage was its port facility. During a break between Anchorage Assembly work sessions, the mayor expressed guarded acceptance of NOAA's announcement.
Well, we're, pleased that the Port of Anchorage certainly is exempt from the designated area. It allows us to be assured that as we go forward with our port expansion project, and certainly the shippers feel much more confident that there will not be a negative impact. So crucial for the port to be able to have that clearance.
According to Spiegler, the exclusion status would likely exempt the port from most consultation situations with the Maritime Administration over construction. If such consultations occurred, they would require little expense. Sullivan says even with the port exclusion, he does have some reservations about the ruling.
I'm still concerned about energy projects on the west side of Cook Inlet, whether it's geothermal possibilities, coal seam gasification. We've got potential hydro projects. How those proceed under this designation is still yet to be determined, because almost all of those are in some sort of a watershed that might have a salmon stream close to a beluga feeding area. So it puts one more hurdle in place, I think, for some of those projects to go forward.
U.S. Congressman Don Young was more critical. In a letter to NOAA Administrator Dr. Jane Lubchenco, he said while pleased with the exemptions, the critical habitat designation still, quote, endangers Alaska and its economy, end quote. He says it could lead to mass litigation curtailing Cook Inlet resource development and have a harmful effect on the recently concluded lease sales. The ruling goes into effect 30 days after publication in the Federal Register. Spiegler said it should be published this Monday. In Anchorage, this is Len Anderson.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, new concepts to address the chronic problem of suicide.
One of the things that we do at the Assist Training is practice asking the very question, are you thinking about committing suicide?
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by First National Bank Alaska, working shoulder to shoulder with Alaskan businesses for nearly a century. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. And by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline for over 30 years.
The legislature today confirmed the appointments Governor Parnell made to his cabinet and to the state's boards and commissions. The appointments were considered in a joint session of the House and Senate. However, there were objections to several of those people. Brian Butcher drew considerable vocal opposition before being confirmed as Commissioner of Revenue, as only 8 members voted against him. Objections were raised by Anchorage Democrat Mike Dugan and Senator Bill Willikowski. Both complained that Butcher had failed to provide information that they thought was important to legislation they were working on. Dugan wanted to know who had actually written the governor's oil tax bill that passed the House last month. He provided a list of requests he had made to Butcher.
The only conclusion that I can reach, Mr. President, is either the department doesn't know who wrote the bill, or they don't want to tell me. In either case, I cannot support the appointment of Brian Butcher.
Willikowski wanted information on what production and cost information the state is not getting from oil producers. He said that information would help the state better manage its resources. Petroleum consultants have pointed out the weakness in the state's data system since 2007. He asked Butcher what specific data other countries collect that Alaska does not get. He cited 11 requests for that information.
When we have our expert, the governor's expert, saying we are handicapped because we are not getting that information, it is incumbent on the commissioner to get us that information. I've asked 11 times, 11 times that I can document. It's actually probably more than that. So, Mr. President, I can't support this nomination because of that. This information is too critical, and I respectfully oppose the nomination.
Votes were not partisan, however. House Minority Leader Beth Kurtula, a Democrat from Juneau, supported Butcher. However, she reminded him and the governor that when legislators make requests, it's serious and they should be answered seriously.
This could have been resolved so easily with just a little more attention. So I'm hoping that in the future that occurs and that we don't have to deal with something like this again.
Butcher was confirmed with a vote of 51 yeas and 8 nays. All the governor's appointees to the Board of Fish were challenged but confirmed. The governor's pick for the Alaska Judicial Council has withdrawn his name from consideration. Don Hayes says he was painted as an extremist and didn't want to bring disrespect to the board. Last week, the Senate Judiciary Committee recommended a no vote on Hayes amid questions about his affiliation with a conservative blog. The committee also was concerned about statements Hayes made under questioning about criminalizing adultery and possibly premarital sex. High winds may have subsided in Alaska, but now high waters are presenting a hazard for Kuskokwim River travelers. With no roads to connect Bethel to outlying villages, the river serves as the main transportation route for trucks and snow machines, but travelers are having problems getting on and off the ice road. Pete Williams is director of the Port of Bethel. He said a port employee had to assist a traveler that tried to drive through the overflow last night.
The snow machine sank and she was up to her waist wading in water.
Williams says that the recent storm pushed water into the Kuskokwim, creating overflow 3 to 4 feet deep in some places. Williams says high tides are particularly dangerous.
Tonight we have a high tide at 9 o'clock and it's a 3.1 and expect a lot of water.
Temperatures are expected to drop later this weekend, which should freeze the overflow and make for safer travel conditions. Anchorage police have located the body of a homeless man near the city's sports arena. The death is being investigated as a homicide. Yesterday, police were called to the scene of a homeless camp along the busy bicycle trail and only a few hundred feet from a quiet residential street. Officers found the body of a 40 to 45-year-old male. The homicide response team was called in to collect evidence. The state medical examiner will conduct an autopsy to determine the cause of death. The victim's name has not yet been released. The death marks the third homicide this year in Anchorage. Tribal delegates from around the YK Delta met in Bethel this week for the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation's Tribal Unity Gathering. There, the audience learned that hundreds of non-professionals in the YK Delta have been trained to intervene when someone shows the warning signs of suicide. From member station KYUK in Bethel, Shane Iverson reports.
Suicide rates in rural Alaska are the highest in the country and the leading cause of death for teenagers in the state. Then, last year, a wave of suicide swept across the YK Delta. More than a dozen people took their own lives, leaving loved ones wondering what had happened and what they can do in the future. YKHC's Vice President Jack Crow says that far too many youth are acquainted with suicide and see it as an option.
Imagine if you have a toolbox of things to do when you have a problem. Suicide is currently in a lot of our people's toolbox to fix their problem. That's something that we want to be very intentional about and take that suicide as an option and throw it away and take it out of our toolbox and not look at it again.
Presenters at the Unity Gathering showed a packed cultural center audience a video where people affected by suicide talked about their experience and the experience of their communities.
Everybody's devastated. It's just not like one family's affected. It infects the whole community.
Much like an infection, healthcare providers in the state are dealing with the issue by treating it head on.
It's time to ask and say what's wrong. The more people know about suicide, the more they'd be able to help.
We often talk about the way that people haven't talked about suicide for years and years.
Mary Johnson, suicide prevention coordinator for the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation.
It's not easy for any of us to talk about it, but that's the way we're going to solve the problem is by opening our mouths and talking.
But talking about suicide can be a daunting challenge for many who may feel they're not qualified to help. Johnson says that a relatively new group called the Suicide Awareness Intervention Prevention Healing Coalition can help. That coalition, along with YKHC, is training everyday people the basics on suicide intervention.
You don't have to be professional to be part of that group. We encourage anyone who's concerned about suicide and would like to be helped be part of the solution to join us.
Last year, the coalition helped to train 240 people in the YK Delta, and Johnson says they would like to hold trainings in every village.
All we need is an invitation from your community and then some support at your end to provide the space to hold the training and to help sign people up for it.
The training takes 2 days and is open to anyone over 16 years old. She says it's not complicated to intervene with someone who may be thinking of taking their own life, but it does take courage.
One of the things that we do at the Assist training is practice asking the very question, are you thinking about committing suicide? It's a very difficult question. Even in that training, it's the hardest part for most of us to say.
Johnson says that intervention trainers will be headed to Napakiak in 2 weeks for the next training. She also says suicide intervention has become a regular part of training for village health aides. I'm Shane Iverson.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by Northern Air Cargo. For over 54 years, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come.
A trial was held this week in federal court in Fairbanks for a Central man accused of inciting a showdown with National Park Service rangers on the Yukon River. Jim Wild only faces misdemeanor charges stemming from the incident last fall, but as KUAC's Dan Bross reports, his case is a flashpoint in a tug of war over jurisdiction of navigable waters in Alaska.
71-year-old Jim Wild, his wife, and a friend were powerboating up the Yukon River from Circle last September inside the Yukon Charley River's National Preserve on a moose hunting trip when they were approached by National Park Service rangers in another vessel. The rangers wanted to conduct a routine boat safety check. Court testimony showed all parties agreed that Wild didn't like the idea, but after that, witness stories veer apart. Rangers testified that Wild took off upstream, swerved toward their boat when they pursued, and only headed for shore when rangers pointed a shotgun at him. Wild claims he was concerned about grounding his heavily loaded boat and was only headed for a safe landing spot to talk to rangers. But the encounter ended in a scuffle on the riverbank. Wild fell or was thrown to the ground by rangers, threatened with a taser, and handcuffed. Rangers say Wild approached them with fists clenched, ready to fight. Wild claims he had his palms up, questioning rangers' behavior. Wild is charged with several offenses ranging from resisting arrest to driving an unregistered boat. The case judge is scheduled to issue a decision on the charges by mid-May, but there's a much larger question looming. Does the Park Service have the jurisdiction to enforce laws on the Yukon River? The state owns the land underlying navigable waters and contests the feds don't have the authority to do law enforcement on the river. The defense earlier sought dismissal of Wild's case on that ground, but a federal magistrate denied it, ruling the Park Service has authority on waters inside conservation units. Wild's attorney, Bill Satterberg, says that'll be appealed if his client is found guilty of any charges. The state has intervened in the case on Wild's behalf. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
At a Senate Indian Affairs Committee yesterday, people responded to criticism of the Small Business Administration's 8A program, saying recent regulatory changes fix the problems. Tribal representatives say the program promises a fundamental change in the socioeconomic status of Native Americans. KNBA's Jacqueline Estes has more.
Democratic Senator Claire McCaskill of Missouri would like to take away advantages Alaska Native corporations have in getting federal contracts. Among other issues, she has questioned the automatic designation of tribes and Alaska Native corporations as socioeconomically disadvantaged. However, Democratic Senator Mark Begich of Alaska says there's no doubt Alaska Natives are disadvantaged.
Think of gas prices at $10 a gallon. 46 communities still using the honey bucket. One-third of the rural communities haul water from a community source. 20% of Alaska Natives living in poverty. This is actually an improvement from when it was 40 years ago and where we are today. A big and sizable piece of that was the 8A corporations and the establishment of them.
The Small Business Administration, or SBA, has issued new regulations that, for instance, increase its oversight. Under the new rules, which went into effect last month, an 8A company must perform 40% of the work, and agencies have to justify any Native 8A sole source award of more than $20 million. Alaska Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski asked Joe Jordan, SBA Associate Administrator of Government Contracting and Business Development, if the changes solve problems with the program.
We're very proud of the regulations from both a fraud, waste, and abuse prevention standpoint and
ensuring that the program's benefits are maximized for the intended recipients.
Senators also heard about increased dividends, jobs, cultural preservation, and scholarships. But the corporations don't track specific dollar amounts showing how much of the 8A profits do go to shareholders. The SBA 8A program has dramatically changed the economic status of the Winnebago Tribe of Nebraska, says president of the American Contractors Association, Lance Morgan. He's also president and CEO of Ho-Chunk, Inc., an 8A corporation that had revenues of $193 million last year. He says Ho-Chunk, Inc. has cut a 65% unemployment rate to less than 10% and introduced a level of prosperity to the reservation where people now own modern homes, for instance, for the first time. I'm Jacqueline Estes.
The 26th annual Arctic Man Snow Ski and Snow Go Race has been delayed until tomorrow due to heavy snowfall at Summit Lake. The annual spring event brings out thousands along the Richardson Highway to ride, watch, and party. As KUAC's Tim Ellis reports, a full schedule of events is still on tap despite heavy snow and high winds.
Arctic Man has been canceled only once due to snow back in 2000, and despite Thursday's strong winds and a forecast that calls for more snow over the weekend, Howard Thies, the Fairbanks man who founded and organizes the annual event, is optimistic.
We don't race on Saturday, we race on Sunday. Sunday, it don't happen. Money goes to next year's purse.
The 2011 Tesoro Arctic Man Classic is shaping up to be the biggest in years. 63 teams had entered as of Wednesday, already way up from last year's field of 29. Arctic Man pairs a snow machiner with a skier or snowboarder, traversing the 4.5-mile course at speeds that reach 80, even 90 miles per hour. Seeing man and machine tearing around a course at such high speeds draws big crowds. Some 12,000 people are expected to attend this year's event. It's quite a sight, says Marvin Falk, a longtime Fairbanks resident who stopped to fuel up his camper Wednesday in Delta Junction. Falk says he's gone to the event for more than 20 years now just to take it all in.
It's the scenery and then watch the event.
23 Alaska State Troopers have been assigned to keep an eye on things at Arctic Man and the Richardson Highway on both approaches. Fairbanks Trooper Detachment Deputy Commander Lieutenant Lonnie Piscoya says up to 16 officers will be on duty at a time.
And then we also have a contingent of troopers monitoring the highway so we can keep the speed down.
Piscoya says anyone intending to get to Arctic Man should leave early, obey speed limits, and watch out for slick spots and other hazards. In Delta, I'm Tim Ellis.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. And follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Len Anderson, Ellen Lockyer, and Jacqueline Estes in Anchorage, Shane Iverson in Bethel, and Dan Bross and Tim Ellis in Fairbanks. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported from Juneau. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Full Circle. Full Circle grows, picks, and delivers fresh, certified organic produce year-round. More information about their 400-acre farm and their organic partners at fullcircle.com. No other port in Alaska is building a 100-rail car loop like the one going in at Port McKenzie. Exporting natural resources from rail to ship will be more efficient than ever. A single limestone deposit in the interior could mean a cement industry in Alaska. Port McKenzie Rail, hundreds of millions in state revenues, thousands of jobs. This message sponsored by the Matanuska-Susitna Borough. In February, Catholic Social Services Pregnancy Support and Adoption Program experienced a theft of client information, including personal information related to the home study process. For questions about identity theft, CSS recommends you call the Federal Trade Commission at 877-438-4338 or CSS at 1-855-222-7309. This message sponsored by Catholic Social Services.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.